Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Blogger News on the Radio. My name is Simon Barrett, and I will be your host today. This is another in our ongoing series, The Sunday Afternoon Murder Club, a chance to discuss crime stories, old and new. Joining me in the studio is my wife, Jan. Hi, Jan.
Hi, Simon. Hello, everyone.
From up in New York State, we have the crime doctor himself, Denny Griffin. Good afternoon, Denny.
Good afternoon, Simon, and hi, everybody.
And I do hope that that the weather up where you are is slightly cooler than where we are.
It's not real hot, but it's very humid.
Ooh. From Orlando, Florida, we have journalist Dave Neckel. Dave, good afternoon.
Hello, Simon. Hello, everyone. Looking forward
and
to today's
from,
show.
And from Fort Lauderdale, Florida, bail bondsman and general troublemaker, William Cobra Storbs. Cobra, always good to talk to you.
Good talk to you, Simon. Hello, everybody.
Alas, our legal eagle, Manny Barling, cannot be with us today, but he will be back next week, and he'll be listening in, so you can pretty much guarantee that next week we'll all get a good beating for, you know, abusing the legal system. But, we'll just have to deal with that when it happens. As always, our chat room is open, and we do invite our listeners to ask their questions of us. I also ask that you be kind to each other in there. Okay, we have a number of cases to talk about today, but let's start with the one that seems akin to getting bubble gum on the bottom of your shoe. It just never seems to go away. Wherever you walk, there's that stick, stick. Yep, I'm talking about Casey Anthony.
Oh, God.
This damn probation deal. On the one hand, it doesn't seem like a big deal. Yeah, just a tempest in a teacup. But on the other hand, it's a legal minefield. Dave, have you read through the appeal at all?
Yeah, I got through, I think I have a couple of pages left that I haven't really quite absorbed yet, because I'm planning on writing about this coming up. I'll have to do it this week before the decision comes down, but it's kind of interesting. Very interesting. So is the order from the judge. It's all very appealing, so to speak.
It's all very appealing.
Appalling, probably.
Right. Denny, have you spent the time to wander through 18 pages of legalese?
No, I have not, Mr. Simon. I have not done that. So I am anxiously awaiting the decision myself, and hopefully it'll all be explained to me in there and how the judge arrives at his decision.
All right. I'm going to give you my thoughts on it, but before I do that, I've got to ask the infamous Mr. C. Mr. C, do you have any thoughts on this appeal?
I would say that it's going to not go anywhere. Half of it is not written on the paper that it's worthy of. And finally, it will make for good torching material. And that's about it.
I hear Jan laughing in the background.
Well,
all
because
right.
I support Jan on this one. It's going to stand.
Thank you.
It's going to stand. It's a bunch of rigmarole. Some grade school attorney wrote this appeal. Okay.
Well, she was just out of school.
Somebody wrote it. I think Casey wrote it down. So.
All right. Here's what bothers me. And there may be good reasons for it. But number one, you'd think that, ace attorney Jose Baez would have his mitts in it. Not so. All right. The appeal is actually from Cheney Mason and Elizabeth Fryer. In fact, I believe that Elizabeth Fryer is the person.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that is actually running with it. Now, there's some pretty harsh words in this document, accusing in not so veiled terms huge amounts of bias by Judge Perry and Judge Strickland. Now, it's okay for Mason to do that. I mean, Mason's basically retired. He couldn't give a damn. He's made his money. He's made his mark. But Elizabeth Fryer is just starting out on her legal career. And I find it somewhat bizarre that you would start your legal career by upsetting a couple of fairly important judges in the area that you work in. Dave, doesn't that strike you as being a bit odd?
Well, you know, the one thing about you mentioned that Baez's signature isn't on it, and I think he's been out of town hyping, trying to sell his client. So, you know, I don't think that he has to be there to sign anything. And it looked to me like it was pretty much Elizabeth Fryer who did most of the work on it. But I think what you get, you know, I was trying to think of an analogy of sorts. But I get like, you know, only Mason could sit there and say, well, under certain circumstances, under certain circumstances, a straight can be royal flush. And then when a reporter asks him, well, how can that be done? I mean, a royal flush wins all the time. How could a straight beat a royal flush? And he'll come back with it, well, that's up to the appeals court to decide. So I don't have to explain it. And then you end up with nothing but horseshit. Excuse me, but that's what you get.
I think that's what I said when he asked me. I said, yeah, it's a bunch of cockamamie bullcrappy.
That's right. Yeah.
Okay, it just bothers me. I just don't see that it's good for anyone's legal career to piss off a couple of judges. I mean, Denny, would you like to weigh in on that aspect?
Yeah, I think what you said makes sense, Simon. You can understand with Mason if he in fact is retiring or going to be going out of the picture, but I would think that a new lawyer just starting his or her career would have, you know, want to think twice about that. And I don't know what the logic is. And I suppose, you know, I've never been to law school. I'm not a lawyer, but I would suppose you can, you should be able to come up with an appeal that I think without insulting or picking a fight necessarily with the judges, if it has any merit at all. So, you know, I don't know. I'm a little befuddled by this.
And Dave, as I understand it, the original appeal was filed via email, and that was quickly bounced back from the appeals court saying, hey, it's got no signature. Till it's on paper, you know, we are not even going to open a case number. I mean,
no.
This to me smacked of grandstanding. I mean, maybe Elizabeth Fryer didn't know better, but Jane Mason certainly did. I mean,
now you
got to
remember, this is the same attorney who filed his motion for Judge Strickland to recuse and notarize it with a stamp that had already expired.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, an outdated notary stamp. So, no, I don't think he pays much attention to detail.
Okay.
To me, it's like birds of a feather. You see how Baez was inexperienced and came in there and pulled one out of his side hip pocket. And I think she feels that, if he can do it, I might be able to do it too.
I think they can get anything they want now.
Right, they can't lose, right.
Because
they
won this case, they think that,
right.
That nobody's going to go against them now.
Right, right.
So,
I agree with Diamond, effectively,
Jen, what you're saying is they're above the law.
They think they are.
Yeah. Well.
And somebody needs to put them back down where they belong.
Yeah, I think the appeals court is fixing to do that. But I agree with, I said you, Simon, but it's actually Dave. I think that if you have good enough merit for an appeal, you go to the merits versus striking fire at the
right.
one who may have been misinformed. You know, let's give the judge that. Maybe he was misinformed. Maybe he wasn't studied up or astute on it as the law would allow. But when anyone takes that approach and fires off at the judge for his decision and is accusatory in that, even stretching it to a biased situation, which is grounds for, you know, disbarment, illegalist stuff, all kinds of different things, and you got to get on that level to defend your client, you have a weak platform to begin with. So I think that they had a very weak platform. I think it's common knowledge to even, you know, non-lawyer folks. They had a very weak platform. So they tried to strengthen that platform by attacking the judge, which, paramount to her career, is probably going nowhere.
Right. And you know, talking about a weak platform, they have less than a week to resolve this before the young lady is supposed to be back in Orlando and report for probation. I believe she's due on the 26th, which will be next Friday. Dave, is it reasonable for the appeals court to render a decision before that date?
No. I think it's reasonable that they can, but will they? I don't know. I mean, I look at what Judge Perry did, and I think the defense gave a little bit of... I think they were maybe initially encouraged a little bit when Judge Perry stayed the motion from, or the order from Judge Strickland. Mainly, it was just to sit down and give the defense a chance to react to it, respond to it. So, and there wasn't much time, you know, for him to do that, for the defense to do that. So I think if the appeals court does the same thing, it shouldn't be looked at as anything encouraging for the defense, that they just want more time to look things over. But I don't think it's out of the question at all that the appeals court could rule this week. I mean, they could rule before Friday. But that wouldn't surprise me one bit.
Okay, now, I don't know the answer to this, and, you know, my legal...
I know
legal
where you're going,
missing.
Though. I know your question before you ask the question.
All right, what happens if they don't rule?
She's got to come back under the first rule. Otherwise, she's in...
They're
going
to have to do something, yes.
She's in contempt if she doesn't. I knew where you were going. You were thinking, well, but what if it all... Does she have to come back? Hell yes, she has to come back. She has an order by the judge. The only thing an appeal is, it's just like when somebody's sent to jail. They're sent to jail, and then you can appeal. Well, I got an appeal in, so that's therefore why I escaped. Wait, whoa, you can't escape. You can't go nowhere. You have to sit there until the appeal comes back. So she has to return until the return of that appeal. And she may as well return anyway, because I believe the appeal's going to...
we uphold Judge Perry's decision. Period and simple. End of story. Come on back. You better be your ass back here.
Oh, all right. So here's the $64,000 question, and I want to get everyone's opinion. Are we going to see Casey back in Orlando on Friday? Denny, do you think she's going to be back, or are the defense team going to win this round?
I think I don't think the defense team is going to win. I think there will be a no decision at that point. The decision won't be rendered yet, or it'll be rendered in favor of the judges, upholding the judge's order. So I think if she's not there, she's going to be in contempt, as Cobra said. I think legally she's going to have to be back in Orlando.
Okay, Dave, how would you view it?
I have to agree with Cobra 100%. You know? I mean, that's the if the appeal court doesn't do anything, make any decision, then whatever Judge Perry said still stands.
Okay, but that wasn't my question. You know, what do you give the odds of her reporting for probation on Friday?
I think that she might not, and the defense is just, you know, going to try and skate like they've been doing all along on thin ice, and hopes that they don't get a warrant out for her arrest or whatever, or being held in contempt of court. I think that they're going to come up with some excuse. I don't think that they want her here on Friday. I don't think the defense has any respect one way or the other for the court. So, and I think that was abundantly clear throughout the trial. So, no, I don't think that they think it's worth the paper it's printed on.
Okay, my own personal view is that the appeal's going to go nowhere. But I think it is possible that a stay of execution, you know, maybe in the works. You know, the appeals court will say, well, we still need to look at some stuff, so we're going to delay the deal for 2 weeks or whatever.
No.
This is a $64,000 question. Can I double down on it?
Okay.
All right, at 12:01 midnight, Friday night, the arrest warrant will be issued for her ass.
Yeah, but doesn't she have till 9 a.m. that morning?
Until midnight.
Yeah, they don't even know where she is.
At 1 minute after 12, Saturday morning.
Oh, Saturday morning, yeah.
I think so. Well, they said that, but, you know, they'll give her time for travel and this, that, the other, but I think it's going to take them a while. I don't think they'll issue a warrant immediately. By the time the clerk gets it, signs it, sends it over and everything else, I would say early Saturday morning there'll be a warrant in the system.
Yeah, because Friday's the 26th.
She ain't coming back.
If they ordered her back for 9 a.m., she's supposed to be there for 9 a.m. And
I say
she's going to dodge it, and then they're going to think that she should get away with it because she's Casey Anthony. That's the attitude that they give throughout this whole thing, that she should be above and beyond the law. She shouldn't have to do her time for anything.
No, the wording of the appeal and the way I read between the lines, I look for the sooner plate in there. Every document ever prepared by any attorney has a lot of fluff and has a lot of different things. You look for that sooner plate. And the reason that she's not going to show, and they're going to err on the side of it's better to ask permission or forgiveness than permission, is for her own safety. So her safety, you're going to hear her safety is going to come into this, and that's the reason she should not be arrested, because we were waiting for the appeal process over here. And now, hell, they drug their feet. They're as bad as Perry is, and yada, yada, and there you go, another whole round of excitement. But I think that she's too dumb to figure out what time to be back anyway. And I think that her attorneys are going to say, you know, sit tight, hold tight. We believe this appeal will come down and just stay where you're at. And if you do, they do end up issuing a warrant for your arrest, at least you'll be transported in a safety-like manner rather than just showing up. So we'll go that route. Plus, that'll give you more airtime. Casey Anthony arrested in Los Angeles and driven back to Orlando, Florida by U.S. Marshals Service.
Okay, Denny, I mean, if you have a $1 bill in your wallet right now, you know, which side would you bet on? That she's going to turn up on Friday, you know, because she has to, or there's going to be a stay of execution?
Well, first of all, my suspicion would be I'd put it better than 50-50 in favor that she does not show up. Okay, I'm not 100% sure, but it would not surprise me in the least. Stay of execution, as you call it, I think would be a big mistake in this sense. It's been a few weeks now. The furor, the initial furor and the hatred and all that stuff seems to have been subsiding, okay? Something like this, giving her, again, some kind of special treatment or appearing that the system is going to kowtow and let her get away with slapping him up or slapping him across the face by not showing up as ordered, I think would reinvigorate the anger out there. And I think it would be a major mistake. If they're looking at her safety and so forth, I think showing her anything special or appearing to cater to her needs or wants would send the wrong message, and it would renew the anger.
I agree.
Plus, it's a slap in the face to everyone else standing probation or being called
right.
into probation. It's a slap in every the whole damn judicial system is smacked.
I mean, the whole case to begin with is a slap to everything.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone else, now all you're going to hear now from all other people on trial and all. And on probation, they're going to want the same treatment Casey Anthony's got. During this whole trial, you heard cases, they want to compare her case to other things to get this and to get that. Well, this is going to be the same thing. Somebody's going to say, well, look at the Casey Anthony case. I want what she had.
It's already started.
Yes, it has. With the doctor from Michael Jackson. And, with Zyra Baker.
Okay. Does anyone else have anything on Casey before we...
I do. I want to know how the panel feels about... Man, I got great respect for the guy, but I don't believe that they'll deal it as harshly as it should be. But... maybe I'm just a little bit too close to the case. Maybe I know a little bit too much about the case and the players in the case. But this whole Dr. Phil thing has got me sideways with Cindy Anthony and George Anthony.
That was exactly where I was going, Cobra.
I told you, man, I can do this.
What do you have?
I can do this.
I'm psychic.
Yeah, I can do this. Well, no, you know, I'm looking at it. I wrote Dr. Phil, and, I've got great respect for you, and I also wrote to Ms. Harpo, Mrs. What's her name there? And I'm like, I got great respect for you, buddy, but what is it that you don't know about the Anthonys that you would even go this route? And it's already been recorded, so whatever's out there is already out there. And I heard an old friend of a friend former acquaintance of some folks, Levi, was given a chance to say five questions we want to ask George. And I said, okay, two of the questions, great. But there's three other questions that should be asked of George and Cindy both. And how in the hell do you sleep at night? That's what I want to know. How do you sleep at night? Do you still hear her screams? Do you still hear her cries? Jesus Christ. And then for how did Phil pull it off? And here's the thing. Now, here's something that nobody knows, and I'm going to reveal it to you right now. Dr. Phil did not pay them, so he says. He made a donation to their charity, correct?
Kaylee's Fund.
Put the bloody Ouija board away.
Okay. Who is on the board of directors of that? And three, has anybody done a Florida Corporation search check? Correct. There is no 503C. There is no nonprofit. They cannot take 80% of the funds as they've done in the past. And here we go again. So I'm pissed because I've done my homework on this one. I'm a Ouija board away. I'm going to drop the Ouija board for right now because I know I'm probably stealing your thunder over there, and I don't mean to be doing that, Simon, but Simon, this case is way too close to me. You talk about this or Haley, and I'll damn sure fill in the blanks for you. And this one here has got me pissed off.
Okay, I got a question. You said something about they can't take 80%. You talking
about
the
they
new
can't
charity?
Take Here's the deal.
With the new charity.
Here's the deal. Even the new charity, I mean, you'd have to get your legal minds back in here, but they've tried this before. This is
not a nonprofit foundation.
This is not whatever money Dr. Phil donated to their fund at the time, and if I'm wrong, I stand corrected, was not a charitable organization as recognized by the Department of Agriculture, State of Florida, as a nonprofit organization. Therefore, it is subject to taxation by the IRS and everything else. And you are not permissible to go and just looty-tooty spend money how you want to pay your personal bills out of that account. That can't be done. It's illegal.
You are entirely correct, but you've got to understand that that first payment by CBS, who incidentally is bankrolling Dr. Phil, wasn't made to a charitable organization. They outright paid for the interview under the disguise of a licensing fee for the photographs. Yeah, $200,000.
Was that CBS or ABC?
I heard that they claimed that they didn't pay them nothing for the interview. Now, listen, you know, if Dr. Phil has lied here now, how much other stuff is he lying about? Now, he's always the one for, you know, pancake, no matter how flat you make it, it's still got two sides to it. Now, if he did not pay them but yet made a contribution to a non-profit organization in their name, such as he said, I heard that just a couple days ago, and I've heard it a couple times, and then I got to checking about the nonprofit. They don't have a nonprofit recognized by the Department of Agriculture, so where is this nonprofit that we're speaking of? Now, if he's wrote a check to them, licensing photographs or whatever, that's a roundabout way of paying for an interview. That's illegal, a lie, and it's short of what he's supposed to be doing out there.
Okay, what I read and the way I understood it was that they were working on the organization, this new foundation or whatever, that it's new, and they're calling it Kaylee's Fund. And they claim that they're not paying them, but he's making a donation to this charity when it gets all set up. And he says the couple will derive no income from Kaylee's Fund. He said the charity's supposed to focus on promoting processes to educate the public about and advocate for grandparents' rights, as well
now,
as missing and abused children.
Now,
but
when
I
they go out
that.
On the road and they start promoting that cause, who pays for their gas, their lodging,
their
phone bills, everything else?
And who's
if
on
that's
the
not
board,
receiving,
like you say?
Right. Who's on the board of trustees?
Right,
so, therefore, who inks the checks? So, I don't care how you sugarcoat it, it's still salty.
Exactly. I mean, on the Kayla Marie Anthony Foundation, the board, it was Cindy as the president, and then she had as officers and directors, George, Lee, Mallory, and I'm assuming it must be some kind of relation to Mallory, Jody Parker, and Brenda Black, and that's it. And, I mean, they took 80% of it for administration fees and stuff, which includes the rent for the building, which was their home, utilities, and salaries.
Mm-hmm. There you go. I mean, you can't slice it anymore.
Exactly.
You can't flatten that pancake any flatter than that there, Dr. Phil, and it's still got two sides to it. That's the only thing. I mean, I think
all
that
right.
You should be honest
first
in your
off,
intention.
First off, Are we talking about Dr. Oh, I'm not really a Dr. Phil?
Okay. I'm not
Oprah,
touching that one.
Oprah, help us, Oprah. You left us in charge with a psycho.
I mean, Denny. Please tell me that you are a genuine doctor, you know, crime doctor. You know.
He's got murder PhD, baby. Yeah. He's actually honorary. See, the mobsters, when they go through the thing and they make this brotherhood, they actually made Denny an honorary member of the crime. And you know, of course, they told him all about the crimes that they committed and everything, so therefore they called him the doctor. He's the crime doctor. So that way he can get in no trouble.
Yeah, we have privileged communications.
Certified privilege.
You know, there is a serious aspect to this. You know, it's one thing for, Denny to... use a tagline of the crime doctor. I mean, no one thinks that, oh, he's a real doctor. It's entirely different to go on national television and call yourself Dr. Phil and fix people's personal problems.
Right.
I mean, this is wrong.
That's right. You're right. Well, it'd be like if we called him Dr. Denny Griff, crime doctor. Now, if we did that, we called him Dr. Denny, then he's breaking the law, I do believe. Now, I don't know what type of doctor Dr. Phil is, but... a lot of times he gives pretty damn good advice, and he's kind of like right up there next to Judge Judy. My God, it's their way or the highway, and that's just the way it is. But this thing here, I mean, he could have talked about 1,000 other cases, but when he pulled these two shenanigans out of the woodwork and going to get an exclusive, never-seen-before interview and yada yada and all the hoopla shit, pissed me off. I'm telling you what. I think somebody started a boycott the Dr. Phil show, and I just want to know, where do you sign up?
Oh, I think that's already started.
That's one thing. What do you think?
No, I've seen several emails and things saying, you know, write to CBS. Don't let this happen.
Yeah, don't go up to TV. Just shut off the station.
He claims that he looked them straight in the eye and asked them questions. Okay, I mean, these people are professional at lying. They can convince anybody of a lie that they're saying. So, I mean, unless they have that lie detector test hanging out, hooked up to them when he asks those questions, I don't believe them.
Yeah, he ain't going to do that because they wouldn't go for it.
Exactly.
You just got me stalled out. Well, I'll tell you what. I used to be able to refer to him. Hey, watch Dr. Phil, man. He's got some good stuff going on. He's going to separate the fly shit from the pepper. And I'll be damned, he pulls a case like this out.
I'm reading on a website now, a news site. It says George and Cindy Anthony, the parents of Casey Anthony, will give their first TV interview to Dr. Phil McGraw. In exchange, CBS will make an unspecified contribution to one of their foundations.
Yeah.
So are we really going after Dr. Phil, or should we be going after CBS?
I say you go after the goose, the goblin, and all the damn little chickens that are following everybody around. You can't hide behind one and say, I didn't do it, he did it. The financial head is very important, but the promoter. I can't even believe that Dr. Phil supposedly does his homework before he takes on these different cases and looks into them real hard and yada yada and all that crap. Well, apparently he didn't look very hard at this one. He just said, yeah, I'll do that. It sounds like a good idea. I don't know. I'm beside myself. I thought Oprah's legacy was behind it. And if it's CBS, then somebody ought to start raising all kinds of hell with both of them.
Well, apparently Dr. Phil's showing a lot of sympathy for the Anthonys. He says they had both suffered a horrific loss with the untimely death of their granddaughter, Kaylee, and they have since endured an unprecedented public attack on their family. Have these attacks been warranted or not? I look them straight in the eye and ask some very tough questions. That's directly a quote from him. And, I mean, come on now. This is a woman that can lie on the stand and convince
Nick Savage
the jury.
Looked him in the eye. Nick Savage, okay? Nick Savage, who is one of them Alphabet Boys, all right? And he is who he says he is. Looked him dead in the eye and asked him some very serious questions, more so than Dr. Phil will ever come to understand.
Is he the guy out in San Francisco? Is that
Nick
Savage you're talking about?
I'm talking about Savage up there in Orlando, brother.
Oh, there's a Savage. Maybe it's Mike Savage or something. He's a real.
I'm pretty sure. I think it's Nick Savage that's in the Orlando prosecutor's office that represent the FBI that sat down and asked him.
Oh, the FBI. No, he is an FBI agent.
Exactly.
Yeah.
He's an Alphabet Boy.
Yeah.
He sat down and he looked him dead in the eye.
Exactly.
And he asked him serious questions, and they lied to him. Period and simple. No, if they want to be on TV, Cindy Anthony should get a damn Free Breeze commercial, and George, he ought to get a damn job over there with the K-9 unit, because he seems to know what dead bodies smell
like.
It'll
never work. Cindy will never get a job promoting Febreze.
Right. Whoa.
Because the Febreze did not work. It didn't get rid
time
of the
thing. I'm calling time out here. Denny has been trying to get a word in edgeways for ages. Denny.
No way.
Two things, Simon. First of all, I agree. I think it was Colbert mentioned it, and I know when Manny, the first week or two after the acquittal of Casey, Manny, I believe, one day said that the interviews, the legitimate networks that were exploring these interview offers were all demanding that Casey would have to take a polygraph prior to them agreeing to pay for the interview. And I certainly think that should apply also, like Cobra said, to Cindy and George. I mean, talking about asking tough questions and you look them in the eye, well, big deal. I mean, accomplished. As I recall listening, it wasn't video, but the audio of the detectives when they had Casey in that room out at the studios there, it sounded like they were asking her some very tough questions. I assume they were looking at her. And look at that fiasco. I mean, it was just because you're asking tough questions doesn't necessarily mean you're getting honest answers. So with this whole gang, be it Cindy or George or Casey or whoever, I wouldn't... I wouldn't want to see him get a dime unless their testimony could be pretty well documented as true. I don't know just how you do. Certainly a lie detector would be a step in that direction. The other thing I wanted to ask, because I may have missed this, but I remember, again, immediately after the acquittal, we were all speculating about how many hundreds of thousands or millions Casey would get for her first interview. And in addition to her, there was, of course, the people we thought would want of George and Cindy, which apparently now is coming to pass, and jurors. I think there was only one or two jurors went on anywhere. I don't know if they were paid or not. I think they just talked. I think ABC had one of them. But I haven't heard anything about book deals, any of the jurors writing books. Has this kind of fallen flat from the financial end of it? I was thinking, like, post-OJ, all the jurors or many of the jurors wrote a book. The prosecutors wrote a book. There was all kinds of books and stuff out there and interviews and like that. And I haven't seen that here. And I really thought there would be an awful lot of action. Unless I just missed it, it hasn't happened.
I think what they're doing is keeping it close to their chest. Unlike those cases, they put it out there on Front Street, hey, we're going to be writing a book. I think there's a lot of little light bulbs on at night, and there's a lot of people burning that midnight oil, trying to be the first one to get the thing published and out, and then you'll see a frenzy of, hey, we just wrote a book, and here it is. Not that we're going to, we did. So I think they're running under the radar right now, but I don't think that the money's used up or gone or anything else. It's still it's still fresh.
I have a lot of people wanted me to write a book, and I thought
about
writing a book.
Oh, my God.
Hang on a second here.
It's a bestseller.
You know,
Dave, it's a bestseller. All you have to do is say,
you know what?
I would be the judge to recuse himself.
No, I didn't. Cobra, I mean, I would dedicate it to one of my loving servants, Cobra.
Do that.
Anyway,
try to buy a copy.
Anyway, here's the deal: the trial didn't end on a happy note. So I think that a lot of these book ideas fizzled out right then and there, because this is not a story that would ever end up with a happy ending.
Right.
So you know, I think that has some kind of an effect on it.
Actually, there is no ending yet.
Mm-mm. But if you write a book, it damn sure ends.
No, but what I mean is that there is no actual ending. Nobody has been charged. Are found guilty in the murder of this child.
Well,
no.
One of the things that I find interesting is, and it involves this probation crap that I really don't want to stir up any more than I need to. Nothing from the prosecution. It's like, no, please just make this all go away. Let's get on with our lives. We don't want to play in this cesspool anymore.
How many pages are in a good book? And I asked that question, Simon. You ought to know. How many pages does it take to make a good book? And not too many, but not too less. But to make it a good book, how many pages does it take?
Oh, that is so dependent on
many
things.
Yeah, that's a broad
things.
Question. Four or 500 pages, you reckon? Because I got an idea.
Oh, much less. If you want people to read it, 200 pages, you're out.
Yeah.
You're out or you're in?
No, you're 200 pages, you're done. Anything more than 200... ain't got
okay.
a winning book.
Okay, here you go then. Cover to cover, we got 198 pages. Front cover, we've got a picture of Casey and little baby, right? And it's The World as I See It. It's the title of the book. And then you flip through, and there's 196 blank-ass pages, and at the very end it says, The End. And you buy the book and you write the story how you want it to go. Period and simple. That's a bestseller.
Actually, you're not too far
Somebody
from.
Somebody has done that before, haven't
right.
they?
Right.
No, but my God, if anybody does it, I said it.
No, really, it has been done before.
Yeah, this is an absolutely true story. I was asked by a publicist to review a book. And I can't remember the exact title, but it was, Reasons to Forgive a Cheating Husband, something like that. And it was only 150 pages, and I said, oh, okay, send it over, I'll look at it. And it was exactly that. It had a nice cover, the rear cover had a couple of reviews, and inside the whole book was blank. Well, my first thought was, I've seen printing errors before, but no, that was the genuine book.
He was doing a point. In other words, there is no reason.
Okay, let's move on a little bit. There was some other news this week. The infamous Sunfire met an untimely end. Jen, do you want to tell us the story?
Well, from the reports I got, George Anthony gave the title to the Sunfire to the junkyard, and they took it and put it on the machine or whatever you want to call that and smashed it and scrap metal. So I guess they couldn't sell it. Or, huh?
The only thing missing from that picture, which was a beautiful picture, was the whole Anthony clan wasn't smashed in there with it.
Well, I figured they must. They're trying to get in the good graces of the people right now. And if they sold that car for the price that they were all saying that they were going to get for it, people would start, like you said before, that would just start another riot with it.
They would have parceled it out. That's what they would have done with that car.
They're probably still going to sell pieces of it. Watch and see. They're probably going to chop the damn thing up in little pieces and say, you too can have a piece of history. $29.95, and we'll send you a right front fender.
Actually, one-inch squares on eBay.
Yeah.
Genuine stain.
Yeah. And to make the matters worse, on the reverse side, there will be a monogram picture of the little girl. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, if they're going to go that far to get rid of it, saying that it has too many memories, what about this swimming pool? They're claiming that she died in her swimming pool. In their swimming pool, why don't they take that down?
Why don't we just burn the whole damn house down and cut out that block area there of all dirt and plant a tree? That's it.
Yeah. I mean, if it was my granddaughter, that'd have been the first thing I'd have done. I'd have took the swimming pool down.
If nobody wanted anybody to get all up in about it, Denny, how many times do you know of, or think that you know of cars, Cadillacs especially, and Lincolns, that have went to the damn salvage yard and been crushed, and nobody ever heard nothing about it, nothing was ever said. It damn sure, none of the guys that you associate with cars are usually ever photographed on national TV after they've been crushed, unless they happen to have found a body in the damn thing. But they're crushed all the time, and it's not on my news that somebody just got their car crushed. So if he wanted it to be quiet, you know, he could have went over and picked the damn thing up and took it out somewhere and stuck it in a swamp or something in the middle of the night and it'd been nice and quiet. But no, they got their little run again with the press, which, hey, we smashed the car. Ain't we good folks? No, y'all ain't good folks.
Mm-hmm.
Y'all just playing around out there, and we see you.
You know,
they were making points like
Dan
said.
I said, you know, wasn't a good deed. I'm sorry.
No,
go ahead.
It was publicity. It was just Listen, they keep getting run on their money no matter what they do. They do it like that. Oh, we're gonna smash the car in the head. That gives a good press and make us look like we're good folks again. Bullshit.
Oh, okay. Enough of car crushing.
Gets me started and then he shuts me out.
We got to be careful. Our whole damn
it's okay, honey. I mean, I know where your hot button is. We can switch it back on in just a minute.
Gotta be careful, Dan. Dave will get us all, how do you do it to Strickland? He'll get us all for Cindy bashing and get us all kicked the hell off his program.
And Dave, on a very much more serious note, I understand Baez is facing yet another bar complaint. I'm not sure what number this is. There's varying numbers. Some say it's number 3. Some say it's number 5. Bar complaints aren't generally a good thing for a lawyer. Do you have any idea who is behind this latest one?
No, I have no idea. The Florida Bar is not really saying anything about who filed the complaint or whether anybody really did in fact file the complaint. I mean, it could be somebody picking up the phone and saying, look, I want you to look into this guy. I mean, I really don't have any answers on that one. I don't think anybody does. But I think it's a safe bet that somebody is, the Florida Bar is doing it for a reason. So
my partner may get slightly upset with me for saying this, but I wasn't barred from saying it. But if it's not my partner who filed the damn thing, I expect one to be filed momentarily. And here is the basis of the complaint. Baez should have never been given a license, number one. Number two, Baez was given a license and it should be taken from him for the simple reason, if he knew his opening statement, back when he claims he knew his opening statement, then to put my client and my client's son through all the red record that they went through, knowing full well that this was some accidental thing that happened in a swimming pool, according to his open statement, and George was the guy, according to his open statement, that disposed of the body, then why were they trying to obtain DNA from my client's son and place it on the body?
Well, that would be a separate one. That would be separate because the one that's going on now is about whether Jose broke any rules when it came to he should have told the court about the mistake in the probation.
I don't believe that. But I think that once the bar has an open complaint riding against you, I believe that everything associated with or any other type of complaints and everything else, that they open the file on you one time and look at all the mischievous conduct that you have performed. And you say it's different. I say it's not. I say that one may not go anywhere, but it all goes to his conduct. It all goes to his status as an officer of the court, supposedly being a little bit better than the rest, a little bit higher, on a little bit higher platform, if you will, and to knowingly allow an investigation to go off in a direction where you may or may not be the chief running board, the gear switcher for the thing, with your investigators and everything else, and cause them to cause other folks, his family, to be caught up in a whirlwind of chaos and bullshit. And to know that, and to know the facts, as you openly said it, that you knew the facts, to me, that's even worse than anything that he could be done in the courtroom. Anything.
I don't think your partner can sue, can go after Jose. I think he's pretty foolproof on that. It's they can go after Casey. You know, he's only relating to the court what his client told him.
Negative. Let me help you out a little bit. And this is in the document drop that Orange County dropped. Under one deposition, it was stated in that deposition that, and I've said this time and time again, that Lee Anthony, at the bequest of Dominic Casey, who was employed by Baez, went and sought out Jesse Grun in Atlanta, Georgia, for the sole purpose of gaining his fingerprints and DNA. When asked the question, what for? To place them on the body. What body? How did you guys know where the body was? We knew where the body was in August, and we continued to figure out what we were going to do. These statements all came out already. They've been in there. They've been addressed upside down the other. The prosecution chose not to bring them to trial. But the fact of the matter is that Dominic Casey was working for Baez at the time. Now, if Jan is working for you and she goes out while in your employ and does whatever and says, hey, Dave told me to do it. Okay, Dave, what are you doing here? You're still responsible whether you told her or didn't tell her, but I believe that they're making a correct statement by saying I was instructed to do so by my paymaster, period and simple. So if he knew, and here's the thing, all the internet out there, was a lot of things been pulled from the internet, but everybody that I know has got screenshots of everything that's ever been said or done, even though they've pulled them at this late hour. However, there was a whole campaign going on to bury Jesse Grun. And if Baez knew what he claims he knew on opening statement, and he was really the guy behind the gear switch pull on all this, then, brother, I don't know of a more deceitful act that you could pull off. Not notifying the court of an error that they made, I don't know that that's in his, you know, that he's supposed to do that. I don't know that that's what you're supposed to do, but I know that you're not supposed to throw somebody else under the bus when you know full well that your client was involved and that you have dispatched investigators to try to create reasonable doubt. To me, that's something wrong.
Oh, okay. I don't want to get into a big discussion about what is potentially a civil case. Denny, Are you kind of surprised about the new bar complaint?
No. I'm I'm not I'll tell you, with this whole crew, Baez, Cindy, George, Lee, the whole gang, Casey, I'm past the point of being surprised at anything, and I think my impression is, my opinion is, that Baez played pretty fast and loose with the rules. I think he may have gone beyond on some occasions, and probably complaints are going to keep coming. And many of them, I think there's grounds. A lot of people have grounds to complain, and hopefully there won't be a whitewash. Hopefully there'll be an honest evaluation of Baez's conduct here. And if something like Cobra says is true, and he knowingly and willfully, intentionally allowed certain people to suffer dire consequences, you know, when he knew the truth all along, I think he should be held accountable for that. And hopefully, if you know, hopefully people that do have legitimate complaints, legitimate gripes, will be out there filing those.
Okay, and I want to put Casey Anthony on the side for a moment. I'm sure that we'll get the specter back before many minutes pass, but I'm looking at the clock. We have about 30 minutes left in the program. I really, really want to get an update in on the Patrick Rust case. Then you led me to believe that that there might have been some activity this week. Would you like to give us an update?
Yes. Last Tuesday, Bill Sullivan and I visited the Watertown area, and we obtained a large volume of documents that we had not seen before. And we're still going through them, but the initial results are we've learned several things that regarding the actions by some of the key players in the case, and how the police investigations, you know, what various agencies did at various times in their investigations. And we're quite excited and pleased that we got the information that I think by the time we get finished doing an analysis of it and then do follow-ups based on what we learn, I think we're moving in the right direction. And the other thing, I wanted to compliment you and thank you for your BNN article about Patrick and the nice job you did of retracing his last walk, if you will, and that is great. And you were right on. If I believe that, speaking of $64,000 questions, that why Patrick was in the clue list that night is one of those. It's one of the questions in this case. And if we can determine exactly why he was there that night when he'd never been there in his life, what drew him there, I think that'll go a long way toward answering the other key questions.
I did notice something interesting. One of the local newspapers actually posted a short article about our program last week.
Yes.
Cool.
That actually kind of surprised me. Often when you look at cases in a small area, the local press tend to shy away if there's conflicting evidence. And in fact, the favorite quote comes from a newspaper in Northern California. The reporter listen politely. We'd had several conversations, and she said, look, you got to understand something. We have to live here.
Exactly, Mr.
Simon.
Denny,
if I may, could I ask you something, Denny?
Yes,
when you
go
got
ahead.
When you got this document dump from there,
yeah.
Did you get any audio interviews?
No. That's one thing, and there are certain audios we believe exist, and we're playing hell trying to get them.
Ask for the one with the roommate. That's very important. And
right.
a good friend of ours that used to be on the show there would probably give a good swirl of it, and that's Peter Hyatt. But also,
yes.
In that document dump, was there phone records?
Only for Patrick.
Uh-huh. And have you had a chance to review those for that particular evening from 8 o'clock until last communique?
Yes.
And what, if anything, did you find?
We found that some of the stories that various people who were interviewed or should have been interviewed, a couple of them gave actual signed sworn statements, written statements. Others, they were just included in narratives. There was not a formal deposition or formal statement taken. But the information that some of these people provided is not supported by the phone records. Let me put it that way. There are discrepancies.
The phone records. Okay. There you go. Now, is there any... reportings in there from the whoever did it, the sheriff or NIS guys or anybody else, where they wrote their narratives or their responses to any of these type of things? Did they also include any of that, or just gave you which sounds to me like a sterilized file?
Well,
does it look like it was sterilized?
Yeah, some documents had been redacted. Not all, and we've got documents reflecting the work of multiple agencies, so it's a matter of getting everything organized, you know, and who did what and so forth, and put it in the proper context. But from what I've seen so far, and again, we're still looking, so I don't want to say this with finality, but some of the things that I and my associate Bill Sullivan see it, that we think would have been red flags if we had been initially in that scenario doing this thing ourselves, that follow-up questions or follow-up interviews and so forth would have been, we think, certainly indicated and, should have been done, and they weren't. So some of the discrepancies we found, it's appearing that we may be the first ones to have noticed them. Either we were the first ones to notice them, or they mean more to us than they did to the people on the scene at the time. I don't have an answer for just what happened, but there are a number of things that should have been followed up on that weren't.
Is it clear that these shortfalls are across the board between the three different involved agencies, or does it appear that any one agency has pulled the cart and everybody else just watched it or helped push it that same direction?
Yeah, one agency, and I don't want to get into specific identification, but one agency seems to have done a pretty decent job as far as looking at, going around looking for security tapes from businesses in the area and going into depth and actually investigating. And we weren't aware of that before. I didn't know, some of the things that had been done, or that at least we now know had been done. I didn't know it earlier that these things had been done. So I was glad to see that at least in one case there seemed to be a pretty decent investigation. Unfortunately, that agency's role at the time wasn't that critical, okay? So, and from there on out, and we're having some issues.
Do you feel that the door is still open, that they will continue to provide information along the way or answer some questions,
or are they just in good faith giving you a document dump that hopefully it may not be taking you anywhere, but or do you feel that they will continue to give you the reach around and provide you with various pieces of format along the way?
Well, we're certainly hoping for that, and, you know, this last week was an excellent start, and when we get done reviewing the documents, we're making up a list of questions that we'd like further clarification on, and hopefully we'll be done by next week, and then we'll get an answer to that. We'll find out whether this was a one-shot deal or whether the door is open. Hopefully it's open.
Well, sounds like you're on your way to solving this mystery, and I say Godspeed and good luck to you.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Coburn.
Yes, sir.
Well, what I like is that your organization, CrimeWire, and we'll do a shout-out for you. You know, it's www.crimewiresite.com. I mean, you're not armchair quarterbacks. I mean, you put feet on the ground. I know that, you know, I've been annoying you and Bill this week, you know, with questions. You know, you've been there. You actually do it. Are you feeling that at some point you're going to step on some toes?
Yeah, we already have. Every once in a while we get a little...
That's funny.
Walk on your own feet. But... well, you know, it's a real rough thing. And this, I'm not addressing now Patrick's case specifically, but generally speaking about CrimeWire. And I'm pro-law enforcement. I had law enforcement experience, a lot of investigative jobs, including state jobs, and and I'm really pro-law enforcement, but I'm not pro-incompetence.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not pro-corruption. So I'm fully supportive of law enforcement, but, you know, any organization or group or entity that is comprised primarily of human beings, you're going to have some people who maybe aren't quite up to the task, aren't quite up to speed. And when that happens, be it intentional corruption, be it incompetence, laziness, whatever it is, when that happens and you run across that, I think you got to address it. I don't believe in whitewashing or pretending that all cops are saints, all Clark Kents waiting to get a call and spring into their cape and go out and solve crime. There are certain cases where things aren't done, they aren't done quite right, or aren't done sufficiently, and CrimeWire gets involved in a lot of those situations. So sometimes when we start questioning why certain things were or weren't done in an investigation, sometimes we're not warmly received.
Simon, I'll give you two givens in the 101 law book of investigators. Number one, there is no bad question, just the one that's never asked. That's number one. You said you was inundating him with a bunch of questions. Hey, the questions are where you get your answers. The truth fears no question. That's number one. And number two, you never get into a case that has not been solved without tripping over somebody, stepping on toes, and literally just outright pissing somebody off. So those two are simple. Once we move past all that, we might get somewhere. But it sounds to me that if they're cooperating this much into it and released any documents at all, it seems to me that they are cognizant about trying to figure out where did they drop the ball, and some fresh eyes just may put this thing to rest.
You're entirely right, Cobra. Dave, you've been very quiet.
I'm sorry, Dave, if I offended you about Judge Strickland over there, my friend.
I mean, do you think that Denny is treading on some, you know, dangerous potential landmines?
Oh, shit.
Uh-oh.
No.
No, I'm only kidding you. I don't think he is. I don't think he's treading on thin ice or anything like that, because that's what he does. He investigates. That's what you know you're supposed to do. So, and I think that if he was restricted, I think that would pretty much go against the Constitution, and at the same time, it keeps the law on their toes. So, you know, police can't do everything. And I think that there are good private investigators out there like Benny that do their work, and they do diligent work, and they solve crimes. So the bottom line is you're shooting for the same outcome.
Okay, so. And Benny, there's one more story. You sent it to me earlier this week. It's a cold case, and I can honestly say that I haven't had time to really look into it, but would you like to give us the thumbnail sketch of Kate Arquette, is it?
Yes, her first name is Caitlin, Kaitlyn Arquette, Arquette, and there's a website, HTTP, Kate, Kaitarquette, Arquette.com. And it tells what happened to this girl. She was 18 years old on July 6, 1989, when she was gunned down while driving her car in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And the police did whatever investigation they did, and they said it was a random shooting. However, it looks like there's a reason to believe it was not, in fact, a random shooting, that this girl was preparing to blow the whistle on some illegal activity, including a major insurance scam, where multi-state insurance scam where people were staging automobile crashes to build the insurance companies. And there was also some drug activity and so forth, and she had knowledge of that. And she, it is believed, was a threat to the folks involved. And for whatever reason, we're still not sure why, the Albuquerque police refused to listen to any evidence. It's an unsolved cold case. They won't take any new information or anything, and you almost get the impression that maybe they aren't totally interested in solving this. Again, you know, that's just speculation on my part, but based on what I know of the case. And we had Pat Caristo. She is a private investigator in Albuquerque. She's also one of our CrimeWire team consultants, and she did an investigation of this case, and I have seen her final report. In fact, it's on a DVD. They made a DVD of the results of her investigation, and it's absolutely stunning to me what has been found. So we're on that, and we're going to be doing more on it. But you asked about stepping on toes. This looks like the case, one of those cases where we may not be all that popular with some people in Albuquerque.
It's okay. Who goes to New Mexico anyway? All right. Let's jog back to Casey Anthony. What is next here? Dave, do you have any thoughts? I mean, is this case ever going to end?
No, and I'll tell you why. You know, there was that that bombshell that came out on the Examiner, which is not a newsworthy anything, but that Casey had inked a deal on what was it, a book, a tell-all book. And you know, in my opinion, I think this is that was ridiculous. But I think that this woman got duped by the defense team. They figured they'd leak this story to someone with no credibility, but it would be enough for that for this to be a big news story. And then in the end, the defense could sit there and say, "Oh, that's ridiculous." And I think the defense, because that's the way they seem to be operating. They know when to push buttons to keep Casey in the spotlight. Now the spotlight is growing dimmer with each passing day, but still, you know, I think that she's never going to go away.
Okay, look, let's talk about the Examiner. If you're a news hound, shall we say, Examiner.com tends to pop up quite often in Google News searches and elsewhere, but it is not a real news site. Basically, anyone that dog can sign up for it. In fact, I think it was about 4 months ago, Google rolled in a new update to their algorithm. It's known as the Panda Update. Not as in panda bears, but actually the person that designed it. And it was designed to strip sites of, high ranking, if you will, in Google searches. One of the sites hit was Examiner.com. Dave, you've had some poking around with the Examiner. I mean, it's just a bunch of people writing for, different sites, isn't it?
Well, you know, I just I put a piece up on my website, and you know, even the publisher, who the CEO of, I don't believe he's really a publisher, of Examiner.com, said that, you know, we're going to sit there, we're going to tell you how to, how often to water your flowers every week. We're not here to tell you the news. So the fact that this person came out with this, is Donna Thomas, is kind of, to me, a little bit strange. I mean, the Examiner is owned by the same outfit that owns the San Francisco and Washington Examiners. But that's just it. I mean, that would be like saying that McDonald's owns Dairy Queen, let's say, which is not true, but making a point. That doesn't mean that Dairy Queen serves the same food as McDonald's. So in this case, the Examiners have nothing to do with each other. And the website says that when we hire you, you come to work, you are an Examiner. That's what we call you. You're not a reporter. You're not anything. You're an Examiner for wherever you live. And they have kind of like oddball Examiners in all sorts of fields. Like they have the Orlando Flirting Examiner, the Orlando Drinking Games Examiner, the Orlando Beauty After 50 Examiner. I mean, they have a whole list of these schmucky Examiners that, what, they're going to sit there and tell you how to make strawberry icing. But it has nothing to do with actually reporting the news. They tell you that you can earn extra income writing about what you love. You can build your portfolio and gain valuable experience. You can set your own hours and you can work at home. It pays to be an Examiner. So, you know, but you don't make any money.
Question.
It came out, yes.
The lady who was on HLN the other evening and stated that she knew for sure that Casey had been paid six figures, and she had gotten all this, you know, crazy information, of which she wasn't allowed to talk about most of it, other than to say that she had scored a book deal, and she had gotten six figures for that book deal, but she couldn't tell us who, where, what, why, and she reported it, and then some newspaper wrote on her reporting. Is that the lady we're speaking of right now?
Yeah, and it's not a newspaper. You see, that's a problem.
Okay.
In her, in
right,
what
well,
she wrote, she claimed sources. She claimed sources told
sources,
her.
Sources, right.
And,
right,
she,
right.
and her grammar was really bad.
Let
now,
me weigh in. Let me weigh in on what I saw right there. I mean, this is my personal opinion, but that's exactly the effect that Quaaludes and different barbiturates have on a person. To me, she sounded and looked like she was an opiate offender. To me, she looked like she was on some form of opiates. Okay.
Well. You know, she talked about the sources, plural. And then as it got closer to the end, she named one, she didn't name, she changed it to one singular source.
Trust me, either
so,
she is,
you know,
God forgive me, but either she is mentally handicapped in some way, or she is an opiate offender.
Well,
period.
You know,
end of story.
It's right
that's
there at the
opinion.
Top of my MarinadeDave.com website. You can read it.
I
titled
I didn't
it
know you had
Examining the Examiner.
Oh,
you know,
I didn't know you
so
had one, Dave.
I went right into this woman.
Look, I ain't no judge, but I'm scared as hell to go to any website you might have.
Well, it doesn't stop you from going to the ones on little girls in panties.
okay,
crazy
kids, play nicely.
I didn't say underage.
Yeah, I'm glad. Otherwise, I'd have called Denny and told Bill to get his Cadillac or his Geo and come down to Orlando.
Okay, Jose Baez. Yeah, we haven't picked on him for at least 10 minutes. Apparently, he's going to be giving an exclusive interview with none other than Geraldo tonight. I mean,
oh boy.
Does anyone have any thoughts on what startling news Jose might share with us?
Yeah, he's going to tell us that she's innocent again.
He's going to say, listen, I got my damn deal with Telemundo. You need to shave your mustache off, because that was our bet, and move sides, okay?
Well, they're saying that this is what they said. Go inside Casey Anthony's new legal trouble. Why she could be back in front of the judge and what it might mean for her freedom.
Gosh.
Okay.
That's the same shit we've been talking about.
But that bit bothers me. I mean, why would she need to go in front of a judge? All she's got to do is walk into the probation office and say, hi, my name's Casey Anthony. I'm the mother that killed the child, but they let me off. And they'll rubber stamp it and say, okay, well, be a good girl and come back every month for 12 months and do your best to get a job. End of story. Right?
And don't be doing no babysitting jobs until you're off probation, okay? We don't need the flack over here, lady.
And we want a legitimate job, not one answering Jose Baez's phone.
No, that's good enough. As long as you can answer his phone, just don't be babysitting those little kids. You'll be all right.
I think that she can do that, can't she?
What, babysitting little kids?
I mean,
I hope not.
I mean, she could go get a job, working for an attorney somewhere.
Of course.
Yes,
she could get a job babysitting kids if she wanted to.
If they'll hire her.
Yeah. Some dumb nut out there will hire her. I tell you, if I had the opportunity and her phone number, I'd say, look at him. I got a J-O-B for you starting right now. Let's go.
I'd kick you as far as I am as I could.
Well, see, I would do that guaranteeing I'm going to get a lot of people to come to my office. Never meet you.
Okay, actually, you're not too far from the truth there. Denny, I read an article on this subject, and apparently there are lots of small companies that would fall over backwards, you know, to employer just for the notoriety.
Thank you, thank you. You're not a smart businessman if you didn't.
It's like anything else. If you're a small business or a new business just getting started and you want to get your name out in front of people, you do what you can. Certainly if you hired her, you're going to get your name out there.
It wouldn't backfire.
You'd have some negative press, but let me tell you how it works. And you'd have to go back and research this, but in 1992, I won Advertiser of the Year for Broward County. I was number 5 in the state of Florida. Of course, I had an advertising budget of $100,000 a month anyway. But I want to tell you something. Good advertising, bad advertising, haters, non-haters, it's all positive. As long as they're talking, your name is still out there. It's better than a business card. That's why I didn't get too upset with all the haters. For every hater you have, you'll have at least 10 good ones. So if I got 10 haters...
Yeah, there's no such thing as bad publicity. You're right. There is none.
There absolutely is none.
Okay,
I mean,
Denny, CrimeWire, I don't think is recruiting. But if you were looking for a shot girl, she could be the one.
Yeah, she could be the one. But unfortunately, I don't think that's on our current list of vacancies. I'll certainly keep in mind.
Right. And remember, you heard it here first.
She can hold a beer can on her head, right, Denny?
Yeah.
If it wasn't for Jan, Simon would have her. If she gave Simon exclusive, she'd be there if it wasn't for Jan. And Denny,
yes.
if nobody would tell, you damn sure have her over there, too. Now, y'all quit lying.
I'll tell you what. If she was to walk into this house, my wife would be facing a murder charge.
You know, I believe that's right.
And then
Simon.
For Manny to come defend
Simon?
Yes.
Oh my God.
I think you're 100% right, and if Jan found out that you invited Casey to come in, she'd be facing double murder charge.
There wouldn't be any more Blog Talk Radio shows by Simon Barrett.
From what I know about Jan, which isn't a whole lot, but what little I do know, your ass, Denny, my ass, and Dave is all dead, too. She'd be awful counts of it for us.
Actually, I have a suspicion that Jan would start her own show up, and it would be called Scaffold Radio.
Hey, I'm not that bad, guys. Come on, give me a break.
Okay, we're just about at the end of the program, but I want to go once around the table and get everyone's parting thoughts on, well, obviously, the Casey story and Patrick Rust, and also Caitlin Arquette. Is this a story that we should be following here on the Sunday Afternoon Murder Club? I'm gonna start with Cobra.
Oh, shit. Look, I don't know if we should follow any stories at all, but for all my fans out there that have been calling me constantly since this show began, the Murder Club, no, it is not true. There's probably only one of us on this panel that's ever committed a bunch of murders. It wasn't me. But we are talking about different murders, and if you listen really closely as I was saying that, you might have heard him laugh up. But no, we are not murderers. We could be, but we're not. And Simon, I think that any story that can possibly lead to a conclusion or justice for the innocents is a story that we should do regardless of who says not.
Okay. Thank you, Cobra. Dave, your parting thoughts for us today.
Well, hopefully we'll get some kind of a response from the appeals court. And in the meantime, if there's anything that we can work on, Danny, on this new story, or, you know, or Russ, you know, please let us know. I think it's something that we could look into, because we've got to move away from this.
Absolutely.
Casey.
And I'd be able to help you with those phones if you so desire there, Danny.
Well, thank you for that offer, Mr. Colbert. I appreciate it.
You're quite welcome.
And on that note, Danny, we're just about to lose our live listeners, but fear not,
okay.
Listeners. It's all being recorded. It's just like Watergate.
I never told a lie.
I never cut down a cherry tree either, right?
No, I did do that.
I said a tree.
A cherry tree, yeah.
Yeah.
That did that.
Okay.
Denny.
Yeah, I think, Simon, you know, that, yeah, Casey Anthony's never going to go completely away, because there'll always be something periodically that comes out. But, you know, there are other stories out there that need to be explored. And one of the things that keeps a case alive, if you will, is exposure, publicity.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody talking about it. And these poor families that I deal with routinely that are just, you know, so frustrated because they've been victimized twice, or at least they feel that they have, first by the loss of their loved one, and secondly by the system. And, you know, personally, I think anybody who is in a position to help and maybe get some resolution. I hate to use the word closure because we can't bring that person back. That person's always going to be gone. So closure might not be the right word, but resolution, where people can maybe find out why their loved one is dead, by whose hand, what happened. I think that's a noble effort, and I encourage it to be done.
And
one thing
you can rest assured
that
you have our support.
One thing on that, Simon, I want to say. A couple of times you have debated whether or not to go forward with the shows that you do and stuff like that. But I would like to bring to your attention one very important thing. Someone once said, if we save one, how many have we saved? One. But that's a lot. And I know that since this show was started, there's a feller that was missing a long time up there in your area. And I believe that solely and based totally upon Jan and you and the efforts that you put forward, were able to find that young man's body and bring closure. Now, that's one. If you never do another one, you got one. But I do believe we could get another one or two or three or four. But how valuable that one be. So I say keep up the good work and keep on with it.
And Simon, just a quick parting thought here, follow up on what Cobra said. Even if the case doesn't get solved, you know, you can't solve them all. But the fact that someone is talking about the case means so much to these families. If nothing comes of it, if no leads are generated, at least the word is getting out and they feel better about
that.
Right. So it's a win-win.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so we're going to keep moving forward.
I just want to say, Danny, good luck with the ones that you're working on right now, and I do hope that something can come out of them, and with all the other cases, too, like you
Thanks,
said.
Man.
Okay, we need to wrap this up. I want to thank our illustrious panel, Marinade Dave, or
thank you,
as he's otherwise known, Dave Knackle, the infamous William Cobra Storbs, and the I'm Not a Real Doctor, Denny Griffin.
Thank you.
Definitely not the doctor you want to call.
You want to
rub that in a little bit more?
Yeah. If you're dying, don't call him. You might end up in a trunk of a car.
You might end up dead sooner.
It's been a great afternoon, and I do hope that you'll all be back next Sunday for another go round of the Sunday afternoon murder club. till then, this is Simon and Jen Barrett wishing everyone a happy and safe week, and we'll talk to you again next Sunday. Goodbye.
Bye, everyone. Thanks again.
Bye. Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.